My name is Pat Hayden, and this is a session on South Africa and Namibia for the winter program, and it will focus on apartheid as a heresy. First, let me start by asking if you all know where South Africa and Namibia are as countries. We have a map up here. They are in the southernmost part of the continent of Africa. South Africa is a very large country. It's deceptive in terms of size here, but it's at least as large as the United States. To go from Cape Town up to Pretoria is like going from San Francisco to New York. It's a very major country. Namibia is the country immediately to the north and west of it, along with the Atlantic Ocean as its border. And it is about these two countries that I want to talk for a little bit this morning. I hope that some of this can be a discussion, because I know that at least the high school students whom we welcome today have been studying apartheid. What I want to do today is look at three things. The first one is what apartheid is and does. The second one is why it is wrong, and what difference does it make that it has been declared a heresy by the Reformed churches and as a matter of confession by the Lutheran churches in the world. And finally, to take a look at our response, both as U.S. churches, members of the Lutheran Church and other confessions, and as U.S. citizens. And I'm mindful of our time, that we need to break at 11:45 so that the basketball members can get in to eat.
Me too.
Okay. Let me just ask, what is apartheid?
Separate races.
Okay. Legalized racism, separate races. Okay. Any other aspects to apartheid you want to mention?
Denial of rights.
Denial of rights. Okay. What definition did you all come up with when you were studying apartheid?
Separateness.
Separateness. Okay. Separateness in what forms? Where did you see separateness when you were studying apartheid? Everywhere, okay. Everywhere. Saw separateness everywhere. Say some of those areas, because that's what I'd like to...
Where you live.
Where you live. Who you marry.
Where you work.
Education.
What you're paid.
Education. What you're paid. Okay, good.
Transportation,
property ownership,
voting
rights or lack thereof, public places, okay,
churches,
very important matter that we're going to be looking at. Okay, can I just ask how many of you have had a chance to look at least at one thing in the suggested reading packet in the library? Not all of it, but at least one thing that you had a chance to look at. Okay. That issue of separateness is so pervasive that it is, in fact, every aspect of people's lives in South Africa and Namibia that is separated. And what's the basis for the separation? No, I mean just the what on how are you divided?
On color.
Okay. On the color of your skin. Okay. No other criteria is used. Your whole identity for every single aspect of your life is based on the color of your skin.
Okay. There was a case about 3 years ago that I'm sure you're aware of, where a woman developed some disease that caused her to become gradually darker. So that she today is considered a black person in South Africa. Her husband divorced her. She couldn't live where she lived. She couldn't do anything. I mean, it was, and She was entirely the same person. So graphically demonstrated, ridiculous.
Okay. And what is there about this separateness in every aspect of your life and the separation based on color that we object to in South Africa and Namibia? What kind of character does it have? It's sin. Okay. Huh? Persecution.
Destroy self-worth.
Oppression.
Oppression, destroy self-worth, Mary?
Keeping white superior.
Okay. Is this a casual program? An informal agenda of a few people? Huh? Well, no, it's much, much more than the Ku Klux Klan. It's legal, it's institutionalized, it's systemic. Systemic meaning that it is part of the system. It's part of the way people live their lives from birth to death in South Africa. There's nothing that you can do as a South African, either black or white, that is apart from the context of apartheid. And this is part of what we want to address when we look at the question of heresy.
And there'd be fear on part of those that enforce it too, to keep it.
Right.
Keep people under control.
Keep fear.
Not get this large number against them.
Mm-hmm. The systemic nature means that it is not only a political system enforced by the laws of the land and the courts of the land, but that it is also a moral and a cultural and a social system. A lot of the things that we looked at, we named briefly, education, sports, public places, all of those things have to do with culture and society. And in all of those ways, too, separateness doesn't only exist, but is reinforced. In your conversations with Janelle in the fall or in any of your own reading, do you have any ideas where it's possible for black and white people to come together and under what circumstances? Okay. We go to an integrated Janelle's family, the DeGrucci's, goes to an integrated church. Anything else? The reason for these questions is to just start you trying to think about what that situation is in terms of living, in terms of lifestyle. And the integration of the congregation that the DeGrucci family goes to and a few others like it is about the only place on an ordinary day-to-day basis where black and white people can come together. There are a few integrated schools, mostly church-related schools, which are primarily for black people, but to which whites can come if they choose to. There are very few white schools which admit blacks, unless they're private and related to the church. I think it's hard for us, it's been hard for me to get my mind around the fact that there is just a real separation, that it's not only separateness in everything, but it is in everything. It's just not common for you to come together with people of other colors in South Africa, either if you're black or if you're white. Well, there would be the normal commercial transactions, yes. There are some stores that are only for blacks and some that are only for whites, but in general, blacks can shop in white stores. In the major hotels in the large cities which cater to international visitors, blacks and whites can eat together, like at the airport restaurant in Johannesburg. But it is still, it's not common. And for restaurants, for people to eat together in restaurants. I think, in one sense, they have been lifted in the sense that the law is no longer used to enforce them. In the other sense, they haven't been lifted because that just doesn't happen as practice. I mean, it can happen, but it probably won't happen because of all of the other ways in which apartheid is enforced. Primarily the pass laws that require that black people only be in white urban areas certain hours of the day. So to that extent, those facilities are integrated at that time. But then when blacks are not allowed to be in that area, they're not. I may be overstating the case a little bit, because when I was in Johannesburg for 24 hours, I went to a theater in which there were both black and white people together seeing a play about apartheid. And in private homes, black and white people can come together. But the point is that if you are not already engaged in the struggle to end apartheid in South Africa, how do you get into that? If you're a white person, how do you begin to participate in that struggle? How would you learn to know black people, to be around them? And if you're black, vice versa. Where would you come together with white people?
If a white person is banned, if that's the word, mm-hmm. the right word, then how many people can they meet with or see? What restrictions are those?
Usually one person at a time. Mm-hmm. And it can be either black or white, depending on the person. Okay. The reason that I wanted to emphasize that is because it took me a long time to understand why apartheid would be considered a heresy. Does anybody know what a heresy is? Why is that word a contemporary one in our world? Okay, it's like an abomination, something that's against the norm. Mm-hmm. A religious belief that is not true, that's been perverted.
It's declared by the church or some official.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Heresies come and go depending on the groups, not necessarily the belief change.
Mm-hmm. Those are all elements of heresy. John DiGrucci defines heresy in this book, Apartheid is a Heresy, as originally it meant making a choice or taking sides. But in the New Testament, it came already to be understood in a negative way. Heresy came to mean for Christians the distortion of the truth revealed in Jesus Christ, and something that not only leads to division within the church, but also to a false witness in the world. And it's those two elements of heresy, the division within the church and also a false witness in the world, that we need to look at in terms of heresy. What was the last time any of you were involved in a heresy?
Yeah.
Breakfast in Mallon's. Well, it's that apartheid is a distortion. Yeah, that's a good question, and it has to do with an understanding of the Word of God and the witness of the Scriptures about the Word of God. The germ of, it's hard for me to articulate that because there is no germ of truth. But the Dutch Reform tradition in South Africa has taken several passages of Scripture and used them as the basis on which it's built apartheid. The primary one being the story of the Tower of Babel, where God came down and separated all the people, giving them different languages and scattering them to the ends of the earth. And apartheid has said this is to be the normal order of creation. So right there you begin to see why it is a distortion of the truth. Why would it be? Why is the Tower of Babel not a good story to base a policy of the church on? Mm-hmm. It's a story, but what is it? What's it a story about? I mean, what part of Christian truth does it represent? That is.
It depends on.
Which is that? Which is normally understood in terms of the whole number of stories in the Bible? Is the Tower of Babel understood as a story about sin, or is it understood as a story about God's will? For creation.
That's a general answer. Mm-hmm. Except in South Africa. Idolatry leads to separation, but not separation is what God intended. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Pentecost story acts as a reversal.
Right. What? How is the Pentecost story a reversal of the story of Babel?
Scattered peoples come together. What happened at Babel's being reversed.
Okay. All this, do you remember the story of Pentecost? All the people come together and everyone can hear the preaching of the apostles in their own language. Okay. People, well, let me just, which would be best, to talk about why apartheid is a heresy or to talk about how odd it seems to us that it is a heresy? In the first place, people object to calling apartheid a heresy for three reasons. The first is that it is something old and antiquated, that in our day when we have a lot of religious pluralism, and religious tolerance is a necessity, why do you declare something a heresy which seems to shut off dialogue and separate people? It isn't declaring something a heresy doing exactly what you're saying apartheid is doing? The second objection to the charge that apartheid is a heresy is that we are dealing not with Christian faith, but with a political ideology and a government policy. And especially in our understanding in the United States of the separation between church and state, why would this lead the church to declare a government policy as heretical? The third question is whether it's useful or helpful. Isn't it just another academic discussion that the theologians can use to give themselves something to write about and talk about, but does it really have any usefulness or relevance, either for South Africa or for us today? Many people would say in South Africa that the real issue of apartheid is not only racism, but is economic exploitation, is the separation between rich people and poor people. And what does declaring apartheid a heresy have to do with that? There are some answers to all of those objections. The first one, the question that it's old and antiquated and has nothing to do with our contemporary church, has to do with a question of truth. If apartheid represents a false view of the world in terms of its separation, isn't it important that the church speak against it and speak the true view? Especially is this true because of what apartheid claims. And there are basically two reasons that apartheid is claimed as a heresy. One is that it categorically rejects the notion of human beings being made in the image of God, the witness of the Old Testament. And the second one is that it completely reverses the understanding of the reconciling work of Jesus Christ in the New Testament. Those are the two reasons why the Christian faith declares apartheid a heresy. Think for a minute, if you will, about the biblical myths and legends and stories and our beliefs about creation. What did it say in the creation story? God created who? Humankind. Are there any descriptors for humankind? Any? Are there any adjectives? Thank you, Janet. What is said in the Gospel of or in the Gospel? Listen to me. The Book of Genesis about creation of humankind. There is in the second story of creation, the information that God created humans, male and female. He created them. But is anything said there about race?
No.
No? All right. I guess it's important to me that we focus on that for a minute, because if you think that you're created in the image of God and I think that I'm created in the image of God, but we then declare that certain people that we know, because of characteristics about them, are not created in the image of God, what does that say? Because I have blue eyes, I'm not created in the image of God? Because I have black skin, I'm not created in the image of God? Because I was born in Mexico, I am created in the image of God, whereas if I was born in Canada, I'm not created in the image of God? And do you begin to get a sense of how absolutely divisive those categories that we use to separate people are from the original story of creation? And the reason why the Old Testament view, which is again and again, that not only are all people created in the image of God, but that strangers and sojourners can become members of the community of Israel if they profess faith in the God that the Israelites worshipped. One of the stories, I mean, part of the reason we love the Isaiah is because Isaiah talks about the temple of the Lord being a place where everybody can come and pray, people from all nations. And there are those who say that when Jesus was throwing out the people from the temple in the New Testament story, that what he was doing was throwing out the moneylenders and the animals and such from the temple, the court of the Gentiles, the place where those who were non-Jews could come to pray to Yahweh. And that the reason he was so angry was because they were taking away the right of Gentiles to share in the worship of the living God. So the whole notion that anything can separate people from being participants in the image of God is one of the grounds for considering apartheid a heresy. And the other one? Well, what is that? Let me just back up and make the very obvious connection. Why would apartheid be different from that? That image that all of us are created in the image of God. That's right. Because the most important thing to know about somebody is their race. In fact, that's the only thing that you need to know about somebody under the system of apartheid, is what race they are. That's used as the basis for all other identity and decisions. What about the New Testament, when we talk about race? Apartheid is a heresy because it denies Christ's work. What was Christ's work?
Break down walls.
Mm-hmm. break down walls of hostility? Anybody give me an example? A wall of hostility that Christ broke down? Jew and Gentile, slave and free. This man knows his Paul. Anything from Sunday service? Do you remember? What did we read? Okay. The story of the Samaritan woman. Okay. The separation between Jews and Samaritans. The prohibition to drink out of the same cup. The prohibition to talk. A man and a woman together. Okay, the prohibition, Jesus, it is said, went even farther than drinking out of a cup with a Samaritan woman. He actually went and lived in a Samaritan woman's house, which was something against the laws and customs of the Jews. He also, during the course of his ministry, went to a Roman centurion's house, did he not, to heal a slave? We assume this. I think the point that Dan has tried to make to us so often, the scandal of the divisions which Jesus broke down in his own daily practice and life, are hard for us to imagine because we don't live in a situation where those divisions are so immediately obvious. But the other reason why apartheid is considered a heresy is because it denies Christ's work. It denies the fact that he came as God to reconcile people to God, people to each other, people to nature. And this is the fundamental truth which the New Testament proclaims, and also which St. Paul wrote a few letters to talk about when the early churches were trying to make things different than that. One of the things that maybe we all take for granted is the fact, maybe you've seen in large cities people handing out Jews for Jesus literature and signs. Has it ever struck you that it's interesting that in the Christian church today there is no distinction between Jewish origin and Gentile origin?
Huh? I've always wondered about that.
I mean, the New Testament church is a really radical witness to the fact that by the second century, after Jesus' death, there were no Jewish Christians except for converts, that there were Christians. That when Jews became Christians, they took on the gospel and gave up their identity as Jews in that religious cultural tradition. They brought it with them, but they didn't make it more important than their identity as Christians. That's an important thing, I think, for us to try to understand. That.
It's interesting, the first time that was their world mission.
Which is part of the reason why there was a need for a confessing movement in Germany during the Nazi ideology. Because again, it was marks of separation, of division of the church, of making something the essential character for participation in the church than your baptism as a Christian. Okay, why is all this important, all of those objections that I said before? Why is that important, that apartheid be declared a heresy? Anybody know? Okay. Why is it important that apartheid be declared a heresy? To take a stand against something that's so radically against humanity. That's true, but the reason that it's so important for the church to act on the issue of apartheid is that apartheid was first developed as an idea, as a doctrine, and nurtured in the church, in the Dutch Reformed Church of South Africa. And it has a history which dates back to 1829 in that church. Let me just read you a little bit here. What is unique, however, is the role of the churches, more specifically the Reformed churches. In a very important address given in 1980, a minister of the Dutch Reformed Church showed conclusively that the present policy of apartheid is essentially the missionary policy of the white Dutch Reformed churches, that these churches not only provided a theological justification for this policy, but also worked out in considerable detail the policy itself. It is these churches that from 1932 on sent delegation upon delegation to the government to get proposals for racial legislation accepted. It is these churches that worked hard to devise practical policies of apartheid that could be implemented by the government, while at the same time formulating a theological construction to justify the present plans. It was these plans that the churches finally presented to the National Party in 1947, which accepted them as a program that became a winner at the polls in 1948. It is no wonder, therefore, to find a 1948 issue of the official mouthpiece of the Dutch Reformed Church the proud assertion, "As a church, we have always worked purposefully for the separation of these races. In this regard, apartheid can rightfully be called a church policy." In fact, as Botha says, the role of organizations like the political ones in South Africa fade into insignificance compared with the overwhelming role of the church in preparing the Afrikaner to accept and vote for a socio-political program that would revolutionize South African life. So that in coming to condemn apartheid as a heresy, we are coming to condemn something that was begun and nurtured by the church.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is the Dutch Reformed Church, is that a denomination that is not aware of, or is it referred to a group of churches somewhere?
It's a denomination in South Africa that is related to the Reformed Church internationally. The Reformed Churches, which includes the Presbyterian Church in our own country, is a part of the tradition of the Reformation beginning with John Calvin. Like Martin Luther, who started the Lutheran churches, John Calvin began the Reformed tradition, and it is the other major confessional body in the world, and the Dutch Reformed Churches are members of that family of confessional churches. Knowing it. That is the reason why the issue has finally come to a head in the last couple of years. The Dutch Reformed Churches were a part of the World Alliance of Reformed Churches, which is the same kind of international body that the Lutheran churches belong to in the Lutheran World Federation. In 1960, the Reformed Churches internationally said to the churches in South Africa, "We are concerned about the policy of apartheid. We think that it's a matter of idolatry, that you are making it into a god. And we would like you to take a look at that." In 1970, they repeated that warning and expressed disappointment that more had not been done by the white South African churches to understand its policy as idolatrous. Finally, in 1982, in Ottawa at the church convention, the World Alliance of Reformed Churches declared apartheid a heresy and, if you can use the term in the Protestant church, excommunicated the white churches in South Africa from the association of Reformed churches. It suspended their membership. It isolated them. Also in the same year, the churches in South Africa, which include the black churches in the World Council of Churches, refused anymore to have dialogue with the white churches until they indicate by some kind of action that they are moving away from the policy of apartheid. Does that make anybody uncomfortable? I mean, you know, the that any big deal that they should finally say, no, we will isolate you, we won't have anything to do with you?
How does it affect the church anymore?
Do they still hold their church then?
Mm-hmm. They still hold their church.
Does that include the black Reformed churches, or is that exclusively white Dutch Reformed?
It's exclusively the white Dutch Reformed churches. And in fact, it was the black Dutch Reformed churches, which were started originally by the white Dutch Reformed churches, that brought this action to the World Alliance of Reformed Churches in Ottawa. And the action that they used, they used one action at the Ottawa meeting of the World Alliance for Reformed Churches to make their point about suspending the Dutch Reformed Church. Anybody like to guess what it was? What is at the heart of the Christian faith and celebration? The Eucharist, right. The Dutch Reformed delegates who were black from South Africa refused to take the Eucharist in Ottawa with the rest of the delegates of the World Alliance of Reformed Churches. Because there were white Dutch Reformed pastors and delegates from South Africa, and if they had taken communion with them in Ottawa, they would have been doing something in Ottawa that is forbidden in South Africa. So they said, we will not, for the sake of international niceties, do something which we cannot do at home. And it was this action, this refusal to share in the Eucharist, that brought the World Alliance of Reformed Churches finally to a resolution and a decision to declare apartheid a heresy. Because it's very visible, not just in matters of doctrine, but in daily life and the practice of the church. If people cannot sit down and eat at the same table together in the Lord's Supper, not because they're not baptized believers, but because one is black and one is white, then that strikes at the very heart of the Christian faith. So,
as far as Eucharist, that must be church policy rather than civil law.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. It is. It's church policy. It's also church policy that black Dutch Reform members may not belong to white Dutch Reform congregations, stated in the constitution of the churches in South Africa. What about the Lutherans? Does anybody know about the Lutherans? Where are they in this whole process?
A while back in America, they were still getting Hitler's picture for their confirmants when they were at catechism.
That's right. In the white German-based Lutheran church in Windhoek, that's true.
Well,
how far back? The interview was settled by Germans, and when the missionaries were finishing in Germany, they came to Namibia, and during World War II, the Namibian church there, the white German church, saw Hitler as a person who gave employment and just was doing wonderful things for the country. And it was kind of a hero, and when the kids were confirmed, at least that's what I heard, they were all in the picture that Adolf Hitler was taking on the wall or something. I don't know when that stopped, so
Paul,
but it has.
Paul, we said that in white German homes in South Africa, they still have pictures of Hitler.
And they celebrate his birthday as a national festival, national holiday.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
When is this?
Mary, I don't know.
I don't know. What do we do that's equally as ludicrous and repugnant as the other people?
Central American policy. By Diamond Smith.
No, the Lutheran, let me say a little bit about the church situation in South Africa as far as the Lutherans are concerned. There are three Lutheran churches in Namibia. Two are black and one is white. There are about nine churches in South Africa, Lutheran churches. Two are white and the other seven are black. In 1977, when the International Group of Lutheran Churches met in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, they took the issues that we've mentioned this morning, the issue of the creation in the image of God, the issue of the unity of the faith as exhibited in the coming together of all believers at the Lord's Supper and in the action of the church, and said, in order to demonstrate the unity of the faith, we call upon the white Lutheran churches in South Africa to confess that apartheid is against the faith, a matter of what is called status confessionis, the Latin words, a state of confession. This was done in 1977. It was a very strong action which the Lutherans had never taken before against anyone. But they were called to task by the black Lutheran churches in South Africa, saying we cannot get our white sister churches, sister Lutheran churches, to work with us,
cooperate with us. So they called on the churches to declare apartheid as a matter of faith. Since 1977, nothing has happened in the sense of any real change in the relationships between the churches. What would you expect? Well, that's exactly the tension and the crunch of the matter, is that apartheid is so much a matter of the way people live economically, educationally, in their employment, that to take whatever step to say no to that system is a real big risk for white South Africans. Oh, I think we clearly do respond in the same way even in the United States. But what I'm saying is the church is saying that it's more important that your confession of Jesus Christ be true than that you suffer social ostracism or some... Well, I don't know, what do you think? No. Not everybody does want to hang on the cross. But what is the faith of the Christian church about? It's about not only hanging on the cross, but overcoming all of the differences and the barriers that the rest of the world says are given. Right? So what could be an action of solidarity against apartheid in South Africa would depend very much on where you were, on what. There are some strong Lutheran leaders. There are also hundreds of thousands of strong Lutheran Christians, both black and white, who are doing all manner of things in South Africa to resist. But there are leaders in the white Lutheran churches in South Africa and clergymen as well as lay people who do not yet see this as an issue. Who don't see this as a... Yeah? They live with them. What are the facts? I mean, if you've been culturally conditioned to believe that you're superior and that a black person is inferior and that you are entitled by right to everything you have, then how, what facts do you need to know? You need to have a complete change of world view. I mean, it's not just going to be enough to learn that apartheid is evil and that it causes suffering, because you can see that all around you. But how do you come to that complete change of view?
So are you
just
going to see that all of your choices on the other hand are each other?
It's hearing. Well, they've been hearing it. And I wanted to just comment about the historically in the church there are three marks of a heresy, which because determining heresies is a very tricky business in the church. I mean, people have a lot of different opinions, right? If we do have religious pluralism and religious tolerance. How then do you make the distinction between religious pluralism and something that is a heresy? What kinds of criteria do you use to determine that something's a heresy? And they have said that traditionally the church has looked at three things. The first one is that it's a partial view. No, wait a minute. The first one is that it's something new. Something new introduced into the understanding of the Christian faith that has never been there before. And what would that new thing be in the case of apartheid? Any idea? Right. That separation according to race is a part of Christ's doctrine. That's something new. That's never been considered to be a part of the understanding that the church has handed down from century to century. That you need anything other than baptism to be a member and confession of faith to be a member of the church. The second mark of heresy is that it's partial. Let's see if I can find that. Whether ancient or modern, introduce something new and alien into the faith and life of the church. This is referring to the first novel thing. No heresy has ever had the original intention of being a heresy. You don't start out to be heretical, right? It has become so only when and where a first unintended lapse from obedience has not been noted and resisted in time. That's why the whole process of the Dutch Reformed Church in relation to its faith and its confession as a Reformed Church goes back to the early 1800s, because it was in 1829 and again in 1857 that the church made decisions about separating black and white congregations from each other in terms of membership and taking communion. It was at that time done on the basis of where people lived and on the basis of the preference of people, white people, not to be just black people. It has developed over that period of time into the heresy because it was not corrected anywhere along the way. That's a long time for something to take to become condemned as a heresy. The second mark of a heresy is something partial. That is, that it belongs only to certain localities rather than being something confessed by the universal church. And right away, I think you can see clearly how the situation in South Africa fits into that. That the white Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa is the only church in the entire world that confesses this theological belief in apartheid, in the separateness of the races. That's not a part of any of our traditions. The third mark is the one that James' comment really refers to, is characterized by an element of stubbornness and disobedience. Many heretics, as we know, as you can learn from the study of church history, actually turned out to be right, even though they were labeled as heretics, and they were right because they persevered, because they were stubborn. But when the church has said directly that something is a heresy, and you persist in being disobedient even after it has been called to your attention, that is another mark of heresy. And that is what the White Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa is doing, is that in the face of worldwide condemnation of apartheid as a policy, they continue to persist to support that policy. In what they teach in church, what they preach, what they practice, what they support in government, in economics, and in social life. And that's the reason why it's relevant, because it's relevant to declare apartheid a heresy. It's not something that the church theologians are just doing to give themselves something to play with, because it is a way of saying the entire understanding of the church has to be turned around. The issue is not apartheid as much as it is the need to clarify the Christian faith and to confess it anew in the context of South Africa. And to clarify the Christian faith in South Africa would mean to clarify that all people are created in the image of God and that reconciliation is the primary business of the church across all areas. Does that make sense? And this is the reason why, for me, I can understand the decision finally of the World Alliance of Reformed Churches and the South African Council of Churches to refuse to have dialogue any longer with the white South African churches. Because to have dialogue is still to say there's the possibility of reform, of modification, but to declare apartheid a heresy is to declare a clear and unequivocal no to that understanding of faith in the life of the church. And it's only when the churches, not only Dutch Reform, but the practicing English-speaking churches who participate in apartheid by the way they live, declare apartheid a heresy, understand it as a categorical no, and turn away from it, can there be the beginning of anything different. We have this session in the season of Lent. It's very appropriate. How do you have a renewal unless you have repentance, unless you have a real specific turning around from? This is why there is the movement growing up in South Africa known as the Confessing Church. And this is a movement among all the denominations to make a confession that apartheid is a heresy, and then to begin to find ways and actions of living out the truth that apartheid contradicts. In the same way that some parts of the church in Germany tried to do during Nazi time. So that if you begin with an understanding, as Alan Bostock said at that historic decision in Ottawa in 1982, that the declaration of apartheid as a heresy is the beginning of the work of the churches in South Africa rather than the end, then you can begin to get some idea of the path that is really before the churches in South Africa. And by extension, before us, in the United States and in all places where we have brothers and sisters connected by faith. And in about 5 minutes, I'd like to say a little bit about why it's important that we look for a minute at our own participation. This summer, there will be another LWF assembly. this time in Budapest, Hungary. The African delegates from not only the South African Lutheran churches, but from the other African Lutheran churches are calling on the LWF to take an action similar to the action the World Alliance of Reformed Churches took, to declare apartheid unequivocally a heresy, and to suspend the white Lutheran churches in South Africa from membership. We have delegates from the ALC and the LCA and the AELC going to that convention. Seems to me that it would be something for us to consider, to write to them and ask them to support this action on behalf of the LWF, to realize that it's not enough to just declare apartheid a state of concession, something you need to consider as a Christian person, but that apartheid is actually a heresy and antithetical to the life and witness of the church. Any comment or question on that? Does that make sense? Does it seem like an automatic thing to do? Seems to me the other thing that the LWF will be struggling with, if they, this will not be an easy action, I think, for the LWF to take. There will be a great deal of discussion and debate on both sides. I hope that what they do is not only, and what I would hope we would do if we would write to them, is to call for renewal among the churches in South Africa, both black and white, as well as support for the Namibian churches in their struggle against the war and against the oppression that they live with. It is a matter of faith. It's a matter of faith and prayer for us that gets lived out in some things that you can read in the newspapers all around you, that under Reagan's administration, the amount of bank loans from the United States to South Africa has gone from $1.5 million to over $3 million. That the trade embargo, the arms embargo, which the United Nations adopted in 1977 against sending any military equipment to South Africa, and the U.S. supported that arms embargo, is documented proof that in the last 4 years we have sent $30 million worth of military equipment to South Africa for the use of the South African government to maintain its policy of apartheid. In addition to these two things, the United States, through its banks and through its corporations, has over $2 billion of investment in South Africa. That is money that comes back in the United States in our jobs, in our pension funds, in our savings accounts, in states, in communities, in national organizations that directly support apartheid in South Africa. The question really for the church in the United States now is, if apartheid is a heresy, then what is our call as Christians in the United States to respond to that? What is our own confession of faith? Not because we're members of churches in South Africa, but because we're members of churches in the United States who also share that same confessional family tradition, whether it's Lutheran or Presbyterian. Okay. It's just about 11:45, so I think if people want to go, they can feel free to. If you have any questions for clarification, or if this has just been completely irrelevant, would like to know that. I don't know whether I contravened church and state, Nancy, by talking about apartheid as a heresy. But I think that something that Jim Wallace said yesterday, that I read in his Understanding of Revival, was what led me to focus the session not on the history or on the foreign policy or on the current activities in Namibia, but on apartheid as a heresy. Political and social changes only come about through changes in understanding, through spiritual changes, through spiritual renewal. And the declaration that apartheid is a heresy is fundamentally a call for spiritual renewal, for a turning around, a completely radical turning around. Then, maybe out of that base, you can begin to look at the practical questions of disinvestment, of who to vote for president, what kind of education to encourage in congregations and with your neighbors and friends. But otherwise, we can declare apartheid an evil. But for people who are Christians, it goes deeper than that.